Hello, and welcome to the Podcast Motor Show. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt. Here each week, we're going to bring on the best and brightest minds from podcasting for them to share exactly what's working with their shows right now. We're going to show you how to grow your listenership, build your online brand, and engage with your community more effectively. All right, let's jump into the show. All right, this week I have a really special guest on the show. I'm really excited to have Nick Loper from Side Hustle Nation and the Side Hustle Show. Nick, how you doing?
Doing excellent, Craig. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I've been listening to your show for, golly, it's all embarrassing when I think about how long I've been listening to like business and entrepreneurial related podcasts, because for a long time I was the dreaded wantrepreneur and just listened to a bunch of podcasts and thought I knew a bunch of stuff before I actually got my toes in the water. But yours has been one I've been following maybe for almost all the 4 years that you've been podcasting. So it's great to finally catch up.
That's crazy. You're there from the very early days, probably one of the very few people from those early days.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say maybe not, but definitely within the first year. And it's so cool to, I think, to see the arc that a show like yours takes after 220 something episodes.
Yeah.
I think that you're definitely the first one on the Podcast Motor Show here that we've had that has so many episodes. So I guess not to dig right into it. Can you give folks an idea of kind of who you are and what your podcast is all about before we dig in?
Someone stubbornly persistent, apparently, who can, you know, make it through those early years of, you know, the Libsyn chart being pretty low. But so, no, I'm Nick. I run the Side Hustle Show podcast. It's kind of become my main focus over the last few years. What the show and even the site, the SideHustleNation.com site, really started as a side project to the main business that I was running at that time, which was a footwear comparison shopping site, and which of course that started as a side hustle itself to my main corporate job. And so it's kind of been a lot of years in the making or in the entrepreneurial journey. But like, yeah, what I was doing 5 years ago would be unrecognizable to, or, you know, what I'm doing today would be unrecognizable to the me of 5 years ago. So it's kind of like a constant evolution, but it's been a blast doing the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of the evolution, I mean, I think there's a certain amount of staying true to yourself that you have to stay disciplined to when your show is evolving and you're letting it evolve over time. Have you run into that either personally or with listeners saying, "Hey, Nick, what happened, man? You used to be kind of over here and now you're over there. You're kind of losing me." Has your compass had to be kind of recalibrated at all as you've evolved?
Well, I just took, you know, this annual member survey and had like 1,200 responses and found that of those, you know, 40% were in what you said, like that wantrepreneur category. Like they hadn't started anything yet. And another 20%, I think, had started something, but like we're still, you know, in startup terms, pre-revenue. And that was kind of eye-opening to me because it's like, well, you know, what have you guys been doing for 200 episodes? It's like, right. just pick one thing and go to town. Like, you know, 12 months later, you might be working on something completely different, but just like that momentum and motivation of starting something, anything really. And, you know, in like putting this stuff into action, you know, all of a sudden makes, you know, the light bulbs start to go off and you start to see these different ideas. And that was kind of really surprising to me. So I don't want to be, you know, producing only, you know, beginner level content, because there's a segment of the population that is already making money and a segment that's already even full-time entrepreneurs. But it's just, it was good to see like, okay, what are people working on? Where are they at today? And, you know, what, even in the criticisms, like, what do you, you know, what would you change? Or what would you like to hear me, you know, cover a little bit more?
And in that feedback, not to give away kind of the inside scoop on your survey, but in that feedback was the content feedback geared that people wanted to hear more advanced things, or were you kind of spot on with the level of advancedness of your content now, you think?
I think that probably correlated pretty closely to, you know, where people are at. Like the people who are already making, you know, $1,000 to $5,000 a month or more were like, yeah, let's go, you know, let's learn more, you know, higher level marketing stuff. And other people were like, yeah, I just need to figure out what idea to start. Like, how do I focus? How do I use my time, you know, to actually get something done? And so there's a mix for all of that, and trying to find that balance is probably a constant challenge. Like we did, you know, the Amazon FBA business model is like probably the hottest side hustle going right now, and has been probably for the last couple of years. So we've got several episodes talking about that. And, you know, for the people who are interested in it, fantastic. But some people are like, yeah, I just skip those because I don't care. And it's like, that's fine. You know, it's like a on-demand, choose your own adventure kind of thing.
What is it about the stick-to-itiveness that is so hard for a lot of entrepreneurs, myself included? I mean, I have shiny object syndrome worse than most people I know. And fortunately, I've been able to stay focused on Podcast Motor as my main business pretty much since it started. You know, I've strayed a little here and there, but have stayed true to it. I think because we had some success early, and so I was kind of beholden to our customers and to the people that worked on our team. I think that was part of me being able to stick with it. But what you've done 200 plus episodes with successful entrepreneurs who have kind of mastered the side hustle to some degree. What have you seen that's like a common trait with the successful entrepreneurs that are able to stick with it, like you said, for 12 months and make something happen?
I think the common thing is starting anything and not being married to that idea as like my lifelong, you know, passion or goal. So my friend Julie puts it this way. It's like, you know, your first steps as an entrepreneur, really like, you know, the first move in a game of chess, like, you're going to move your pawn out into the world and just see what kind of reaction it gets. Like, it doesn't matter. And probably chess players are like, of course it matters which pawn you move. But I'm like, I don't know enough about the game. So just like, you know, that's like your first step. It's not your commitment. You're not going to get checkmate on the first move, but it's just like, you know, this one tiny baby step. It doesn't really matter. And, you know, it's all about trying to figure out what reaction that it gets. And like in the case of hosting the show, absolutely started, even positioned in my mind as an experiment. Hosting was $15 a month. Had it been 25, 30, the show might not even exist, because I was like, what am I signing myself up for? Like, I don't want to commit to paying this extra server fee. Like, I had no idea how it even worked. And it was just like, even seeing a little bit of momentum, a little bit of positive feedback in the first episodes are horrible. Those are the ones, like, I emailed everybody I knew, like, download this, leave me a review. They're horrible. Like, I'm so super embarrassed by them now. But you, like, over time, it became, like, it's become my like art. It sounds cheesy, but like, it's like the highlight of my week. It's like putting together the show and, like, you know, trying to do the intros and outros and stuff. And it only come, it's like Cal Newport, right? It's like, what's he call it? be too good to ignore. I forget the title of his book.
But it's like, oh, yeah.
It's like, it's not like the passion, like, because it's stressful. Like, I don't know if I have an undying passion, or, like, you know, start a business around your passion. It's like, his argument is like, no, the passion comes from the continuous practice and like this journey to mastery. And that's kind of, you know, I've found that to be true. And I think a lot of the people that I've had the honor to have on the show have found that to be the same way, right? Like, if you have a podcast editing business, it's like, you know, you start out like having this major passion for it, but I imagine you kind of learn different tricks and you improve your trade over time, and it becomes something that you're passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for sure that you can start out being passionate about whatever your business is, it podcast editing or running your podcast or whatever. But in the end, for me at least, and for a lot of people I know that runs big successful businesses, it's not about a time tracking app or podcast editing service or running a successful podcast itself. It's about the business and the goals and the creative process around kind of the higher level stuff. But I think you're spot on that at the beginning, the best way to make sure you stick with it, at least for that first iteration, that first version of what your business is going to be, is have some success.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have any, that's super easy to just be like, this stinks. let's do something else and then go chase that other shiny object.
Yeah, it's like, if I can get people to that first dollar, right? You know, whether it's just, you know, flipping some item from, you know, a garage sale, or, you know, selling something out of your own garage, or just, you know, landing that first customer, even selling like your first gig on Fiverr. Like, if I can get people to that first dollar of, you know, job-free income, of side hustle income, like, then the light bulbs start to go off and they're hooked. And then I think that's what I want people to feel, is like that rush, being like, okay, I am more than, you know, what it says on my business card. Like, I have worth to this outside world. Like, I can make money outside of just, you know, my 9-to-5. And then, you know, hopefully we can scale that from there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the Side Hustle Show is obviously very successful, kind of top of the marketing funnel, if you will, potential customer acquisition and everything. But how does kind of it fit in with everything else you do around community building and interacting with your listeners for your overall kind of brand?
So it's been surprisingly to me, like I thought of myself as a writer first, but it's probably been the number one, you know, avenue of discovery and the number one kind of growth driver for Side Hustle Nation. And what really flipped the switch, really the inflection point of the show, is, you know, a little over a year deep into it, I realized, like, look, this is never going to be, you know, Entrepreneur on Fire. This is never going to make like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, like from sponsorship money, or it's not going to be like a standalone business. So once I recognized, like, okay, this is kind of just a content marketing arm, and started behaving as such, you know, that's when things started to take off. And the specific tactic that really worked for me was producing an episode specific lead magnet or opt-in offer based on the content of that episode. So it's like, okay, we just talked about, you know, how to sell courses on Udemy, even if you're not an expert. You know, if you want Scott's top tips for, you know, everything we talked about during the show, you can go to sidehustlenation.com/ you know, Scott, or whatever the episode number is. And that, you know, within, so at that time I had an email list of probably 1,000 or close to it. You know, within 3 months it was 3,000, within 6 months it was 6,000. So that really kind of accelerated the growth of everything, and has continued to work pretty well. The other community element of it has been the side. So that's the problem with podcasting, was it's such an anonymous medium, right? Craig, you told me you've been listening since like almost the early days, but like, you know, I know I've seen your name around, but you know, this is the first time that we're talking. And so it's like a hard, it's hard to get a gauge of who's on the other end of the mic. Cause it's just like the production process is me in my living room, and it's been the same since day one, you know, whether that's going out to 10 people or to 1,000. So getting people on the email list has been huge, because then you can send people, you know, back to your website or back into, you know, what we've set up is the Facebook group. And it actually came out of the member survey from a couple of years ago. Like, would this be valuable? Because I was hesitant to, you know, I don't want to set myself up to like have another time suck and be moderating spam and do all this stuff in the Facebook group. But it's turned into a pretty cool community. You know, people are supporting each other and answering questions without my direct involvement in a lot of the threads. And I do like to spend some time in there, because it's cool, you know, cool to interact with people and see what everybody's working on.
Yeah, I think that the community building aspect is huge. We had a guest on a couple of episodes ago that was in like the gardening niche, and talked about Facebook groups and how she leverages Facebook groups as her main community building and engagement vehicle. Yeah, it was fantastic interview. But I think it's the secret for building a really engaged following, because email, I think, is great. And it's easy as a business owner or someone who runs a podcast or whatever kind of content marketing you're doing. Email is easy, because you feel like, okay, I'm going to send this email and everyone is going to read it, right? And the reality is, if you're really good, I don't know, Nick, 30% of the people will actually read your email.
Right. I'll aim for a 30% open rate. I'm happy with a 30% open rate. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, that's that we get that on some emails. And a Facebook group post, I think, will get real engagement of like 50%. They'll see it. Many more than 50% will see it, but 50% will see it and think about it and click on your link or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's fantastic. We have a Facebook group for Podcast Motor, and yeah, we're not quite as community engaged in there. I think I am the one kind of spurring some of the engagement, but here, a handful of months into it, we're starting to see some of that organic kind of dialogue that you're talking about. And I think that's really where the community takes off.
Well, it was a lot of, I don't know, it was a long time coming, because I always like said, hey, this is the community for part-time entrepreneurs. But like, there was no interaction outside of like commenting on the blog. There was like no interaction amongst the community until finally, you know, putting that group together. And so it's like, well, should I have started it earlier? Or, but, you know, would it have been a ghost town? I don't know. So it's like trying to find that balance.
So what do you think really kind of kicked the Facebook group off successfully? Because I think, you know, even with a good following like you have, you could build a Facebook group and then it's crickets in there as well. What did you do when you launched the Facebook group for it to be successful and have that organic dialogue?
So what I tried to do at the beginning was like, and I still try to do it today, is like kind of seed conversations. So like, for example, this week I say, hey, I'm gonna experiment with this like theme day productivity system. So Tuesday is meeting day, Monday is, you know, kind of finalizing the pod, like content production day, or, you know, finalizing this week's podcast and doing some writing. Wednesday, I'm working on my various other side hustle projects and some administrative stuff. And then Thursday is kind of like for the longer term, you know, growth and strategic stuff and strategic projects. And, you know, that generated a pretty decent conversation of like, you know, are you guys working, or do you guys do something similar? Like, have you tried this? How did it work? And, you know, so we got a good conversation going there, but like, hey, what are you working on this week? You know, sharing your wins on Friday is kind of a tradition inside the group, but just a lot of other people now are like asking about, hey, I'm a student, I'm 17 years old, I play two sports, like what kind of side hustles should I be working on? Or, you know, and it's like interesting to hear what people are coming up with.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. It's great. I mean, kudos for building such an engaged community. I think that's testament to people being so passionate about following what you've been putting out on the podcast and then kind of taking that conversation over to Facebook, which is, as a content creator, the ultimate goal, right?
That's right. It's just kind of, I guess, more touch points, but like more less salesy touch points, if that's a thing. It's like, you know, the more they can interact with your brand and have like, you know, a positive, helpful experience. It's like the jab, right hook stuff, you know, trying to get in front of people, but do it in a non-salesy way.
Sure. So for folks who aren't familiar with your show, can you give an idea of kind of where the show is in terms of downloads and some statistics that people can kind of give a sense for? I know you were a finalist 2 years in a row for Best Business Podcast Award, but can you give kind of some framework of where the show stands these days?
That's right. I lost to Startup and I lost to Smart Passive Income. So I'm in pretty good company up there.
Not bad. Yeah.
Almost 4 years deep into the show, you know, 220 something episodes, new episodes are seeing around 20,000 to 30,000 downloads per show and 220,000 downloads a month. And later this month, we should cross the 3 million mark in lifetime downloads, which, you know, just over a year ago was at 1 million. So you can see that it kind of compounds
over time. People are going back and listening to 50 or 100 episodes, I guess.
That's what's surprising. So like episode one, for example, is not, I mean, it's fine. Like it's an okay episode, but it's like, you know, I've had an email list of 11 at the time that it launched and, you know, nobody heard it. Probably had, you know, 20 downloads in the first month or something. And now it has 14,000 and it's like, okay, people are going back and kind of binging on the archives, and which I think is a cool value add for sponsors, right? Because they're looking at, well, what are your numbers today? Well, it's like, well, let's look at, what if we fast forward 2 years again and see like, well, how many more people are going to be listening to this that you didn't even bank on? Because, you know, some of those other ones have become pretty valuable real estate and there's no monetization on there.
Right. Yeah, no, those are big download numbers. That's really impressive and not surprising for anyone who can get to 200 plus episodes. I sure would think that your numbers would be something like that, but I think 200 episode is, it's quite the achievement. I'm kind of in awe. We have on my personal podcast, I have like 86 episodes now, and I feel like we've been beating the drum pretty hard. But
well, what kind of? So let me ask you this: what kind of time you think goes into producing each of those 80 episodes? Or maybe like, I imagine it was probably more at the beginning and maybe less today. But you know, what kind of time commitment does it take you to produce that audio?
Yeah, so it's kind of a co-host show, so it's me and my co-host almost every episode. So maybe one out of five will have a guest or something like that. And when it's just he and I, we've done 75 of the episodes together. So we're really good. We don't have much editing at all. I like a very conversational style podcast anyhow.
Yeah.
And it's just he and I talking about businesses. We're at roughly the same kind of scale of business at this point. And so, yeah, I mean, it takes me, I talk about it in multiples of like raw audio time. So if we record for 45 minutes, it takes me an hour to do the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Including the, or on top of the 45.
Right. Yeah. No, total. Yeah. So it's 45 minutes of raw audio. It takes me an hour to put it all together. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's not bad.
But at this point we're a well-oiled machine. Yeah. You know, I think that the tough one really is an interview show like yours, where most of yours, where you are talking to somebody who is not a veteran podcaster a lot of the times, right? And so they don't have the gear, they don't have the setup, they don't know when not to talk over somebody and mute their microphone when they're coughing and misspeaking a lot and stuff like that. I mean, for me and for our audio guys, that's where they just go in and chop the hell out of an episode. Just because they have to make it sound good. But for Dave and I, we're pretty good at it these days, I think.
Yeah, and I've gone back and forth with that. Like, there was a segment, you know, probably a pretty good stretch of episodes where it's like, hey, look, it's a podcast. People say, it's fine. You know, just roll the tape. And I've kind of gone back after a conversation at Podcast Movement, the one in Fort Worth, I think it was 2015, where, you know, it was kind of the influx of the NPR crowd, of the heavily produced, you know, really well edited shows. It's like, well, this is what we're competing with in people's earbuds. And it's like, it sounds a million times better than anything that I've ever put out. And it was kind of an eye-opening or an ear-opening moment to be like, well, maybe it's time to step up the editing game a little bit and trying to produce a tighter sounding show. And that's taken some time, and I've had some editing help lately to do it, but still take the final pass myself and make sure, like, okay, is this going to be a tight listening experience?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think for anyone looking to start a podcast or kind of up their game, there's definitely a minimum threshold above which your podcast has to live. And it has to sound good. It has to be even in both earbuds and all these, you know, the volume levels have to be normalized. And I think if you can get there, then people won't stop listening. Right. But I think what you're talking about is you're upping your game to the point where you're drawing people in because of the production value of the show. Is that's what your kind of goal is?
Trying to. One of the shows, you know, one of the very first shows that got me even into podcasting, and I was probably annoyed. I think I clicked a link from Twitter and was like annoyed to find it was like audio and not a blog, was a Tropical MBA, you know, formerly the Lifestyle Business Podcast. So Dan and Ian and those guys have really done an awesome job in the last year or so, year and a half or so in, you know, stepping up their production game, where it's like, you know, they're fading in and out. They're having like multiple, you know, guests and multiple, you know, people on each show, and they're like sprinkling in their own thoughts. And it's like, it started to become really, really well done. Whereas like, you know, in the early days, they're like recording from some cafe in Vietnam, and there's like background noise and it's all this nonsense. Like, to your point about, you know, make sure it's the same level in both earbuds. Like, the first 6 or 10 episodes, like, I accidentally, because I didn't know any better, like, exported it as stereo. And people would be like, every time you stop talking, like, I can't hear what the guest is saying. It was like, oh, my
no.
God. Just so bad. Because it's like, you know, you make every mistake when you're new and starting out. But, you know, figuring out how it all works is part of the fun.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think people are pretty forgiving with podcasting. And the nice thing about it is you're continually putting out new content. And like you are doing with your survey, keep putting out content, talk to your audience and hear what they like and don't like. And then you can kind of adjust it from there. And I think that kind of goes to the point about the NPR style podcast is for the topics that you're talking about or the topics that I'm talking about on my personal podcast. I don't, quote, need it to sound like NPR, because the people who listen to my show just want to hear kind of what I'm doing, and people who listen to your show want to hear what you're doing and the guests that you have on.
Right.
And I think it's more content driven than like entertainment driven, like a startup or a serial.
Right. Hopefully that gives me a little bit of a pass. But right. some of the comments on the survey were like, man, the audio quality sucks. Or like one of the more common ones was like the intro, like voiceover guy. They're like, man, I want to rip my headphones out every time I hear this super cheesy voiceover guy. So it might be time to bid him farewell and redo the intro, because we wouldn't want to have anybody ripping off their earbuds.
Sure. So going back to a little bit of the content upgrade that's specific for each episode, and growing that email list, how did you start kind of implementing that? I think it's a fantastic idea that I don't hear a lot. How did you start implementing that? And kind of at this point, talking about your process and systems, what does that look like when you're doing an episode?
You bet. So the tech that's being used to deliver it is Lead Pages. So, you know, you click on the link, it opens up kind of a lead box form, name and email, and then they're actually delivering the files as well. So, you know, upload the PDF to Lead Pages, and then they deliver the file, and then that interfaces with AWeber, my email service provider, and the person gets added to my list as well. The advantage is, you know, if you're already on the list, it kind of sucks as a user experience thing to like have to enter your email again. We're trying to figure out how to make it so you don't have to do that. But like, you know, they're able to just get the file, and they don't get any, you know, you're not going to get extra email from AWeber or anything like that. My process at the beginning was just summarizing the episode. And if I did it right after we recorded, like if I didn't have a meeting, you know, or another recording, like right afterwards, like I could bang this out, you know, probably 1,000 to 1,200 words of like, just, hey, this is the most important stuff that we talked about. And I already start each episode with kind of an outline. So that kind of gave a little bit of structure to that file, but just called it like the highlight reel. Like here's the most important, you know, tactics and takeaways that we covered. Now I've got a writer in the UK who listens to the episode in advance and summarizes those shows for me. And I'll go through and kind of do the final edits and then upload that to, like, I'm really excited about like the automation that I have now. So I have like uploaded to Dropbox, which triggers like an if this, then that recipe to email my VA. And it says, hey, there's a new highlight reel ready for you to, you know, to install on the website. And so she gets that and she can now do like the, all of the lead pages and WordPress integration on the show notes. So I was excited when I figured out like, okay, you know, you can use the if this, then that recipe, like when a new file hits this folder in Dropbox, like trigger this email. And so that's been kind of fun.
That's great. That's great. And that's driving most of the new email signups on your site, as opposed to kind of the like the pop-up or the main kind of opt-in widget on the side.
Yeah. So some of these episodes have thousands of opt-ins. Oh, I think the most popular one is like over 6,000 opt-ins just on one podcast episode. And some of them are duds. Like some of them are like, well, that wasn't a super tactical, you know, nitty gritty episode. I don't really need to go download the summary of that, you know, if it's more high level stuff. But some of them where it's like, we're really getting down into the weeds. It's like, look, don't take notes. We've already done it for you. You can just go here. And those ones tend to convert really well. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I would guess that easily 2/3 of the list has come through those lead magnets or those content upgrades rather than kind of like the site-wide lead magnet offer.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, we see really good conversions on our content upgrades on our blog posts at Podcast Motor. And yeah, I mean, I think the hardest part for me a little bit is I'm very sort of left brain. So it's tough to put something together that looks good. I think I can write the stuff or create the checklist or whatever, but then the tech of creating a nice looking downloadable PDF is a little bit difficult for me. So we actually send some of our stuff out to like a graphic designer. But yeah, do you use anything or is it just a straight PDF to download the content upgrade?
Yeah, I definitely won't claim that it looks good. It's just a Word doc, you know, saved as a PDF.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, I think there's InVision is one of the tools I think that you can create some fancy looking stuff with. Yeah, I think once somebody gets to that point, they definitely, like you're saying, want the nitty gritty details of what you talked about in the episode. And so giving it to them in a straightforward manner is just fine, I think. So before we started recording, we were talking about Podcast Movement, which is a big podcasting conference this year. It's in LA in early summer. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's in August.
Okay. I am not able to go, but you're definitely going from what I understand. Talk about kind of what Podcast Movement is all about and why you go and kind of what you get out of going.
For me, at this point, it's kind of like become a little bit of a family reunion amongst internet friends, as my wife calls them. Oh, go have fun hanging out with your internet friends. And it's like, I don't know, so I just got back from a Traffic and Conversion Summit, and that was in San Diego. And it was a real contrast to, you know, the Podcast Movement show in that it was much bigger. So I think there was like 4,000 people there versus maybe 1,500 at the last Podcast Movement. And so it's a smaller community and like everyone has this in common, like, well, what's your show about? And you can instantly start that conversation versus, you know, at TNC, it was like, well, you know, what do you do? What are you working on? Well, I'm a paid traffic generation conversion optimization specialist. Like, okay, I still don't know, you know, okay, what is that?
What did
like,
you say?
Yeah, and I was like, well, okay, you know, how can we work together? Like, how can I help you? Like, I don't know. There's a weird kind of, it was just a, not as tight of a community, not as fun of an event, like from that standpoint, from networking standpoint. Last year, the content I thought was a little bit weaker than it had been in years past. And part of that could just be like, well, you know, I've been doing this for 3 years. I've been to three of these now. And so it's like, I already know that. I don't want to sound like pretentious in that way, but it's like, okay, where's like the advanced track or where's like the veteran track and stuff like that. But it's a cool event. I think Dan and Jared do an awesome job with it and looking forward to see what they have in store for us this summer.
You touched on something that really struck a chord with me is, you know, people come to us at Podcast Mojo and say, hey, how do I start a podcast? And we know that, I think, really well, just because we do it every day.
Yeah.
And we get people started with what I think is a pretty good kind of recipe for getting started. You know, it's iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and launch with 3 episodes and ask for ratings and reviews and all these things that I don't want to say a lot of people know, but a lot of people know. After that, like you hit the upper bound of podcasting knowledge. And this is my naivety, maybe, but I feel like a little bit quickly. There's not like so much you can do with your podcast to make it extraordinary in terms of the audio. I mean, you talk into the mic and you record it and you put intro and outro music with it. But from there, it's really like brand building and community building. As the podcast goes itself, I feel like it's a pretty well understood box that you need to operate in. Is this making sense at all?
Right. Because it's like you've kind of given yourself the constraints of your own show and the format and stuff. And it's not to say you can't ever change that up. But it's like, to a certain extent, it is what it's going to be. And then it's like, well, unless I want to start a new show to you know, play around with this new style, you know, listeners have come to expect a certain consistency. And I think that's actually really important for branding. So like, you know, the voiceover guy has been at the front of, you know, just about every episode. It's like, you know, kind of an important branding thing. So I try and start, you know, with consistent language and like lead into the interview with consistent language. It's just like taking a play from terrestrial radio, traditional radio. It's like that consistency on that morning commute. And it's like that familiarity where it's like the station that I grew up listening to while getting ready for school is like, well, I know at 6:45 every morning, it's like the Beat the Producer, like trivia game. And, you know, so there's something to that, like consistency and like having different segments that make sense. It can be tough to grow beyond that as an artist, maybe. I would try out different formats. Now, Pat at Smart Passive Income, I think, is a great example of that, like experimenting with the narrative style that he has before, kind of like his more recent one, where he talked about like his journey as a public speaker, where he like laced in clips from, you know, all his different speeches. I thought was really cool. And just kind of like taking us down this, you know, 6 or 7 year journey of him as, you know, being really intimidated to get up in front of people on a stage to being like now a really polished and professional public speaker.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So taking, like you said, the box that you've kind of set your show to live in and then experimenting a bit around that is the way that it stays fresh for you and interesting and exciting and engaging 220 plus episodes in now.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, give the people what they want, or give, you know, don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? But then like,
sure,
you still want to experiment with different things. You have different ideas for it. So one of the like episodes I'm trying to map out, trying to plan out for this spring is like kind of a, you know, taking the roundup style of blog post and, you know, making that into audio form and, you know, trying to get people to record their answers into SpeakPipe, which is like a lot more intimidating than answering an email. So we'll see what kind of take rate that I get on that. But I think that might be a fun one because we're coming up on the 4-year anniversary of the show and also episode 250. So we'll see if, you know, people want to participate in that one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love the concept. I love the concept a lot because that's the secret of podcasting. I think is in a lot of ways, it's a one way content medium. You are talking and they're listening. And then to give people the voice to participate back in the show is really powerful. Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
That will be, that'll be very interesting. Yeah, definitely. Definitely stay tuned to hear how that one goes. Yeah. So, you know, just to kind of wrap up the thought of keeping the show fresh and reinventing yourself a little bit within the context of what you're doing. So at this point, 4 years into the same podcast, what have been kind of some of the challenges with sticking with something for this long? And how have you managed to be continuing to be so successful at the show after 4 years?
Well, the challenges have kind of turned out to not be the challenges that I initially thought. Like I initially thought, I was like, oh man, if I commit myself to doing a weekly show, am I going to run out of guests? Am I run out of people to talk to? And that really hasn't been the issue at all. Like there's always going to be plenty of interesting people out there to talk to and who are willing to talk to you. The challenges lately have become, or I guess the initial challenge that I didn't really see at the time was like, you know, converting listeners into subscribers, but, you know, was able to figure that out and found something that worked there. Challenges today are like, you know, trying to find, you know, trying to fill out the sponsor calendar, trying to mix up the content in a way where it's like, well, we just had an episode about self-publishing, so we don't want to talk about that for a little while. Or we just did an episode about Amazon, we don't want to talk about that for a little while. Trying to mix up the level, like, you know, beginner, intermediate, advanced stuff. I mean, just trying to keep the listeners happy, keep them coming back for more, kind of moving up that value chain from, you know, people who've never heard of you to listeners, to subscribers, to fans, and hopefully, you know, try and grow that whole pyramid as well too.
Yeah. Neat. Nick, last question, just talking about sponsors real quick. Any advice for folks who are looking to get sponsors or really kind of round out their sponsorship kind of profile with their podcast?
I've been doing a little bit of proactive outreach, and actually, I thought I was super smart. So I had my VA go through like, hey, look, go through the last 6 months of Entrepreneur on Fire, for example, and like just create a spreadsheet of all the, you know, all the companies that sponsor the show. He lists them out on the show notes page, so it's easy to find. And okay, so I can go through like, okay, that company's not a fit. I don't like these guys. Oh, I actually do like this company and their products and stuff. And trying to find a decision maker there, or trying to figure out, well, we buy through an agency, or, you know, do we work with Midroll? And like that part has been a lot more difficult than I imagined, or than I guess I thought it would be at this point. So still trying to figure that out. And, you know, a couple people have reached out and be like, well, I'll help sell sponsors on your show. Like, well, you know, go for it. You know, they bring me deals and I'm happy to pay you a finder's fee or whatever. But it's, I don't know, like it's still a new medium for a lot of people. And that's why I thought it was smart to like target companies that you knew were already advertising on podcasts versus like, you know, just cold pitching some other company that you like and be like, hey, I'm a fan of your company. I think my audience would love you too. That's probably a bigger hurdle to overcome. And then like, so typically what we'll do is like, you know, maybe a 4-episode, call it a trial run, see, you know, test the offer, test the response and say like, okay, now we can bite off a bigger, a bigger chunk of episodes or a bigger placement now that we have some data behind it. But even then, like you saw, it's like, you know, just a download, the analytics are horrible, right? A download doesn't necessarily mean a listen. I might download something today and not listen to it for 6 months if it sits on my phone for that long. And like, oh, I've been meaning to check this out. So I think with better analytics will become, you know, easier to sell sponsorships and create kind of a win-win for everybody.
And do you see better analytics in reality? I mean, I think the technical nature of podcasting, where once the file is downloaded from the server and is on your phone, there's not a lot of visibility into what happens then, right?
There really isn't. And so half the market is iOS. And so it would be interesting if Apple ever opened up that data, but I don't know if they will anytime soon. Like for Stitcher, where it's streaming, you can get some more interesting data, or, you know, even plays that happen on your website, you can get some more interesting data. But, you know, from the bulk of the stuff, like, happens, you know, on a local device, and it's like, okay, are they going to send that data back to Apple to, you know, publish out to the world? Probably not. So that's one of the frustrations.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we looked at trying to tackle that technically with like third party app makers, like Pocket Cast. I mean, those guys have a lot of privacy concerns themselves, you know, with everyone measuring everything about every user in the mobile world. And I think the podcasting world, the producers and the consumers want to keep some of the anonymity of podcasting. The advertisers want all the visibility,
right?
But everyone else wants to keep it just like it is.
Yeah.
Which I can't argue with. Well, I can't argue with them. I think it's kind of nice to say, hey, this is our show and it had 10,000 downloads and that's kind of what we know. I don't know that I want to start tracking, say, did you listen past 12 minutes? That's a little weird.
Yeah. It was like, well, where did you fall off? Because I mean, I think that would be valuable information as a host to be like, well, this part of the conversation was a little slower and, you know, you lost people there, right? Mm-hmm. Like that would be good to know. Or just like, you know, they bailed right after the intro. Like, well, clearly you didn't give them enough reason to stick around. Like, what's in it for me, kind of thing. So it's like, you know, lessons learned on how to. And somebody actually, this was a good set. This was at, I think, a New Media Expo presentation, where it was like, you know, with radio, It's like people are always coming in at the beginning or always coming in the middle. There's no beginning to any, like, you know, radio broadcast versus podcast. Like, everyone starts at the beginning. So, like, you know, how quickly can you get to the point? How quickly can you explain, like, you know, what's in it for me for listening to this, and try and keep people engaged? I think Michael O'Neill does a really good job of that after studying, you know, traditional, you know, interviewers and stuff. It's like, well, you know, bringing people up to speed in the middle, even though, you know, they probably start at the beginning. Hey, once again, we're talking to, you know, so-and-so from this website, and, you know, he's the author of blah, 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 like, trying to, like, give them plugs in the middle. I think he does a great job of that.
Yeah. Interesting. Awesome. Nick, thank you so much for your time today. Can you share with folks where they can learn more about you and the Side Hustle Show?
SideHustleNation.com is the best place to find me. Of course, you find the Side Hustle Show in iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Awesome. Nick Loper, thanks so much for your time and for coming on the show.
You bet, man.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Podcast Motor Show. If you're enjoying the show, head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. I'd love to hear what you think. And as always, head on over to podcastmotor.com for more great resources on how you can become a better podcaster. We'll see you next time.